From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a pill. What if a pill could open your memory to the first days of your life and you would experience those memories when you sleep, not necessarily as dreams, but as vivid reenactments of actual days early in your childhood? What if that pill could unlock some of the earliest trauma experiences from childhood and allow you to see them anew? Would you take that pill? Would you recoil from the idea? Would you want to mine your own experiences, searching for a key that might make your current life better? A new work of fiction examines a broad range of themes, central among them the subject of memory and trauma and how far we might be willing to go to change ourselves. The Book of Losman tells the story of Daniel Losman, an American literary translator living in Denmark. He's 43 years old. His longtime girlfriend has left him for a more ambitious man. Losman and his ex have a 3-year-old child together. And one weekend, Losman notices that his son is starting to exhibit the kinds of physical symptoms that he has, symptoms of Tourette syndrome. He jerks his head. He snorts uncontrollably. And Losman wonders, did I pass the gene for Tourette on to my son? What follows is an achingly human and deeply relatable impulse, the desire to find a way to prevent your child from suffering as you have. The book is riveting from the opening pages when Losman and a neighbor find a man dead in his apartment to a confrontation in which Losman literally punches an angry swan in the face. But it's the prose from author Kyle Semmel that captured my attention immediately. The book is written with the unmistakable imprint of an author who has had to edit or translate dozens, if not hundreds, of other books. He knows purple prose and strained writing, and he knows how to wield language with precision. You might know Kyle as the former executive director of Writers and Books in Rochester. I've known him for years, and so I really wanted to like his book. Turns out I loved it. In this hour, we talk with Kyle about whether he, too, would take a kind of magical pill to unlock his childhood memories. We'll talk about how far we go to cure ourselves and our children, and we'll talk about punching swans and bad cocktail parties and whether it's possible to get bored of living in Copenhagen. Kyle Semmel, The Book of Losman is the name of the book. It is available officially now, right?
Correct, yes.
Where do you want people to find it?
Anywhere where books are sold. This is a traditionally published book with a wonderful small press called SFWP, and you can go. I will be launching the book on Friday at Book Eater in Rochester, and you could go to that launch party, or you can just go to Book Eater and buy it there, or you can go to Amazon. You can go to wherever you buy books.
Book Eater rules, but there's a lot of great independent bookshops.
Of course, yeah. And Rochester has a growing number of wonderful independent bookshops, so that's terrific. Anywhere you want to buy your books.
If you buy books at the little mom and pop called Amazon, it's probably on there.
Yeah.
But there's probably other real mom and pops, so.
Correct, yeah. And I will say that I publish under the name K.E. Semmel. So if you look under Kyle Semmel, you won't find it. But K.E. Semmel.
Do I have to call you K.E. on this program?
When you mention the book, you should. But I don't mind, you know, Kyle. I have a weird history with the name Kyle because when I was a kid, I struggled with the name. I didn't like it. My mom knows all this. She's listening probably right now, and she remembers the days when I said, I don't want to be called Kyle anymore. And later on in life, when I moved to Denmark and was I had begun my life as a Danish or an American expat, I discovered the work of the Danish philosopher K.E. Løgstrup, and I thought that's me. I'm K.E.
K.E. Semmel. There you go.
Yeah, and I was back in those days. I was also doing much more experimental fiction writing, and so I thought, you know, it'd be cool to be degendered, so that nobody would know if I were, you know, if I was a man or a woman. And so that was the other reason behind changing from Kyle to K.E.
All right, Kyle. The book is The Book of Losman. Listeners, you have so much to do. Sometimes you need a work of fiction that's going to make you think, but also just you're going to enjoy the prose. I would be shocked if anybody listening picked this book up and in 10 pages didn't think like, wow, this guy can really write. Like, I'm in. So we're going to talk about a lot of different things, but you've made clear that this is not necessarily an autobiographical book, right?
Correct.
But Connections listeners might recall you were on this program recently talking about how Tourette syndrome has affected your life. The protagonist in the book, Losman, has Tourette syndrome. He's a polyglot. He's a translator, just like you. He's a baseball fan. He had a deeply affecting experience with a teacher early in life. There's a lot of K.E. Semel and Losman, isn't there?
A lot of Kyle Semel.
Oh, there's a lot of Kyle Semel and Losman. There is, isn't there?
There is, yeah, and it's by design. I've always been fascinated by novels that kind of tinker with the idea of autobiography and fiction. It's obviously a novel. I mean, the story itself is clearly, I've never experienced what it's like to relive my babyhood memories or childhood memories.
There's not necessarily a pill that will magically do that.
Not yet. I also never lived in Copenhagen. I'd lived in Aarhus, which was the second largest city. I was a mailman there. I wasn't translating. All these things are kind of, I'm just playing with it. I can go into why I was so interested in doing that.
But, well, I know. I am curious to know why. Yeah.
So about 7 years, actually, when I started working at Writers and Books, as you can imagine, that was it's a very demanding position to be the executive director of any organization. And for me, coming into that, I needed an outlet for my creative, for my life. I just needed to escape in the mornings. I always got up at 5 a.m. to write. And so when I was working there and feeling a lot of stress, I also had a lot of tics then, as we discussed earlier. But writing this book every morning allowed me to kind of escape the whole Writers and Books thing. And so I also needed to not have to do a lot of research. So the idea of having a pill that could restore your lost memories has long been in my mind for 20 some years, how fun that would be. And then when I was starting to write this book, I realized that I finally had a vehicle with which to write it. I could use the pill idea, because it was also around the same time I was diagnosed with Tourette, that I could use the pill and write this story, and I could just use my experiences in life. And so that's how it really kind of seems a little bit autobiographical that way.
I'm going to keep saying this, and this, Kyle's not going to challenge me too much. The prose is so good. The writing is so good that it's interesting to find out in a different podcast I was listening to that you were on, that apparently this was not your first submission, and that earlier in life, you had a number of rejections, 47 rejections, mm-hmm. 46 were pleasant and kind, and one that was not. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
One out of 47 was jerky. 46 out of 47 were like, you keep at it, Tiger. What was the one out of 47 like?
It was just literally, I wish he'd been more, I wish he'd been more, taken more risks with his sentences, which is somewhat ironic given what you just said, but the person did not like my sentences in that particular publishing house, I guess.
And this person was blunt.
Yeah, they're often very blunt. And I'm actually okay with blunt. I just thought that was kind of funny, to be told that, especially after 46 people have written, like, this is really good, but, we're just not going to do it. Now, you go back in time. Cormac McCarthy is an example. For 20 years or so, he was publishing work and getting nowhere with it. He had 5 books of fiction out that did not sell, and yet his editor at the time believed in his work, as clearly he should, but the books didn't sell. Nobody bought them. And it wasn't until Oprah Winfrey picked The Road for her book club that suddenly he became, a huge bestseller. So I guess what I'm saying is that the days of publishers, particularly big publishers, taking risks on unknown authors is kind of past. And, can still have unknown authors being discovered, but it's just not like it was before. One of the 46 editors who rejected not this book, but my previous manuscript, was the same guy who discovered Michael Crichton. And he wrote a really nice paragraph about my work. And I still have that, because he was a colossus. And, obviously Michael Crichton is a figure that people know.
It is so hard. The publishing world is so hard. 15 years ago now, when I was trying to find a publisher for my book, I talked to my uncle in Jamestown, New York, and he had written a book called A Hometown Went to War. He had interviewed at the time 30 surviving service members from World Wars who were still living in Jamestown. And historian Stephen Ambrose had written a foreword and all this stuff, and he couldn't get it published. So he self-published it. And then he wrote a second book called Backtracking in Brown Water. He had gone back to Vietnam 40 years later. He'd taught an English class. He'd kind of retraced some of the places he had been during the Vietnam War. I edited the book for him. Again, self-published, couldn't get a publisher. And so he told me when I was writing the book I was writing, he was like, just self-publish it unless you're trying to change your life financially, you know, because nobody's publishing anymore. It's so hard to get in the door, to get somebody to listen to you, to read your work if you're not a name already. I'm like, well, how do you become a name if you're not a name? And that was 15 years ago, mm-hmm. Kyle. And now it's like the world that you're in has got to be even tighter.
It certainly is a challenge. But, you know, my take on it is it's, you know, this is going to sound ridiculous and cliche-filled, but part of the joy of writing is simply the writing. It's the journey towards writing every day, getting a story together, imagining that story, and getting to the end of it. The publishing thing is, in a sense, you can't really worry about that as a writer. You just have to tell the best possible story you can. And even this, it took 7 years in the end to write, or to reach this day, I should say. It didn't take 7 years to write, but you know, you just have to write the best possible story and not worry so much about the publishing. But I will say that some of the best publishers, I think, some of the most vibrant works of fiction that are being published today are coming out of small presses like SFWP. They don't have the same concerns, in a way, for the marketplace that a lot of the big publishers are having, but they have more concerns. They want to make sure that the books that they publish and spend a lot of money on are going to sell big numbers. And you know, it's always a crapshoot because nobody knows what's going to sell and what's not going to sell. But small presses will take risks, and that's what SFWP does. And they take risks with books, and they're terrific books. So a lot of the books that you can't see or won't find, you know, from one of the big five, you know, you'll find them in small presses, which is another reason why, you know, supporting indie bookstores is important, because they're the ones, in many cases, who are shelving those indie books.
Talking to Kyle Semmel, you'll find his book under the pen name K.E. Semmel. It's called The Book of Losman. It is out today. And in a little bit, we're going to talk about the nature of memory. This book had me thinking of some of my favorite podcasts on the theme of memory and how strange it is that even the biggest moments in our lives, if you have to think back, you definitely will remember the big details. But a lot of people, and I'm sure me included, are more confident that you know everything about that moment better than you think you do. Memory is very amorphous over time. And we're going to talk more about that coming up here. We're going to talk about why I think this book, not to get weird and cliche, but this could definitely be a movie. I mean, I think it should blow up. But I want to start with some of just the story itself, which I really, really love. Losman, the protagonist, he's a 43-year-old living in Copenhagen. He's an American. He seems to know that he had lost his relationship because, you know, he's not a very daring person. He's addicted to routine. He's not what you'd call a climber or a striver. And what I appreciate is that you wrote the story in a way that humanizes that part of him. Because I think a lot of 40-somethings, me included, is wondering, why do we always have to look for something bigger and better? And, you know, his ex is clearly more of a striver and viewed him as not as very ambitious. But I think it's very human. And I kind of was rooting for Losman. Like, that's okay. Like, you like your life, you know? And you don't have to feel pathetic. You don't have to feel bad about liking your routine. Tell me a little bit about that aspect of Losman.
Well, I guess this is related, but one of the things that I've always appreciated in books is the kind of focus on a single character. Obviously, there are more characters in this book than just Losman, but focusing on that character, I like books that do that. And one of the things that I don't think we see a lot of in contemporary fiction is a focus on a male character who's lonely or isolated.
That's interesting.
And that result of, I mean, that there are certainly books that do that. But I wanted to, in this case, focus on somebody who was isolated and lonely. And I guess that's really, and I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but that was one of the reasons why I wrote him as I wrote him, because he certainly is not a striver, and he's happy with his life to a degree, but he is looking for something more.
And he knows he's lost a relationship that it hurts. No, I mean, it's very human. I thought you drew that in a very complex way. And a brief aside, by the way, early in the book, Losman has to go to a cocktail party because he's a book translator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his bosses are essentially there. And he's got to go make an appearance. And there's a moment where, I don't know if you or Losman, I don't know if the narrator or Losman is talking about him. He's translating this book that the world loves this book. It's very popular. He hates it. He thinks the writing is garbage. It's just sort of pop crap. And I don't know if it was you or Losman, but compares it to Dan Brown. So I just want to ask you, is it now understood in the literary world that Dan Brown's just like a standard of like really popular but not very good writing?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't think I...
Did I misremember that? I think he mentioned
Dan
Brown.
No, it's definitely mentioned. And Losman is the one who kind of mentions that. But I don't necessarily take Dan Brown to task, nor do I necessarily want to say that his writing is bad. What I'm thinking in that particular scene was that is a formula that has already been done, and that is what the author in this, you know, the fictional author in this story is doing, is taking that same formula.
And Losman's kind of rolling his eyes. He's going, oh, of course, this is going to sell. For fun, can you describe to listeners the premise of the book that Losman is translating?
It's a detective who is, well, let me say, a detective who is, you know, you're...
Uh-oh.
I can't actually describe that. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought it's a... The author has written about a character that has... I forget the name. It's like Niels Petersen, and he's got an alter ego that's like Peter Nielsen or something like that. And they're... It's like this bizarre crime story, but it's kind of hokey and contrived.
It is, but like I have to admit, I was not prepared to answer that question. So that's why I'm like, I don't remember exactly how...
That's such a dumb little detail. It's not a dumb detail. I was laughing out loud at that section. You've had to translate many books in your life, right?
Yeah, and nobody's ever asked me about that particular part. So I was like, how do I describe that?
I apologize. It was such an aside in the book. You've translated how many books in your career now?
More than a dozen.
More than a dozen?
Not all have been published, but more than a dozen.
Have you liked most of them?
I have, yeah. I mean, I think the experience of translation is a fantastic activity. And in doing that, you're so embedded in a novel, and I've only done novels, you're so embedded in that world that it just becomes a wonderful, rich experience. And... yeah, some are definitely more exciting than others, but at the same time, it's just, you know, you're recreating something from one language into yours, and that is just a wild experience.
So Losman is in every major event in his life, or everywhere where we see him going, he is managing his Tourette syndrome symptoms, and he is doing that in different ways. He's balling up his hand. He's figuring out ways to allow the tics to move through him, because the more that Losman doesn't tick, the more it builds up and it feels like a kind of, I think you've described it as kind of an alien force within your body that has to get some sort of manifestation. For listeners who didn't listen to the previous appearance that you had on this program just a few months ago, talking about Tourette, can you just describe what that is like, especially for listeners who, as we talked about, think that Tourette is swearing loudly in public, getting stuck cursing. That's a small percentage of It's a subclass of Tourette. It's not most cases. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about ticking and let listeners know what Losman, the character, is experiencing.
Yeah. So for me, when I was around 8 or so, I started to do some things like like a lot of throat clearing, and twitches, eye blinks, head jerks, and things like that. And at the time, of course, we didn't talk much about things like that, and I didn't know what it was or why. But in which we talked about the last time I was here, and the HuffPost piece I wrote about an experience that I had in grade school that really affected me, and so I started to develop these kind of strategies for hiding these tics from others. And so, yeah, so some of the things that Losman does are some of the things that I've done. Tourette is a condition in which there are multiple ways of manifesting that. And for me, by comparison to some folks that I've met even recently, this past weekend I was in Toronto for a Tourette fundraiser. People who have the spectrum of things where they are doing very vocal public things, such as shouting or banging on a table, then all the way down, and I would say all the way down to me, where I'm much more, you know, like I can hide it a little bit better than somebody who's publicly has these urges to
bang on a table or shout
and things like that.
Yeah.
I have the urges, but my urges are typically more like this kind of thing or like that. And I give you, you know, when I do my most recent vocal tic is this one here, when I just do like that, which I can easily turn into a spit. So like I can hide it by actually making it seem like it's more of a normal thing that I'm doing.
So Losman, same way, and he does it as a strategy. And it's an example early in the book. In fact, right away, he runs into an attractive neighbor in his apartment building who he doesn't know well, but she's worried about a neighbor upstairs who it turns out is dead in the apartment.
Yeah.
But he, in his interactions with her over time, you know, I don't know if they were doing laundry or like he bumps into her later and she kind of flirts with him a little bit and he gets nervous, but he's describing suppressing his tics mm-hmm. so she won't notice them. And you talked about that in the last time you were on this program, that is something that people with Tourette syndrome, not all, of course, but some may decide to do to just get through social situations. So, you know, either you don't feel embarrassment, which I hope you would never feel embarrassment, but I understand, or you don't have to explain, right?
Yeah, and you certainly feel a lot of social anxiety. And I think that was what I really, with Losman in that scene you mentioned, my hope is that readers take from that scene the understanding that, you know, like many people with social anxiety, I mean, people with Tourette's have that as well. And it's an additional level of anxiety in that you're trying to not, you know, have tics in public like that.
There's also something I wanted to ask you about. Losman's ex, what's her name?
Kat.
Kat, of course. So Losman was with Kat for years. The character of Losman, he's from Philadelphia. He mm-hmm. met Kat when she is Danish, but was in the United States. And she met him and they became friends. He took her around the city. They did a lot of fun stuff together. They started dating. And he, at some point in the courtship, basically has to decide, because she asked him, like, you know, I noticed that you kind of, I don't know if you mentioned the head jerks or some of his tics. And he's got to decide at that moment, like, well, if I'm going for it with this woman, like, I'm not going to be able to just suppress this forever. And he tells her.
Mm-hmm.
And she responds something like, you know, you're my little weirdo or my sweet little weirdo. And she kisses him. And it's actually a really loving, beautiful scene. And I really appreciated that. And then how you contrasted that with the fact that years later, they have broken up. They have a son. And she's dropping off the 3-year-old. And their relationship's very different now. It's not bad. You know, they're cordial to each other, but they're not together. And at one point she mentions his obsessiveness, but it's not warm. It doesn't land warmly. In fact, he takes it, it's very icy and almost a jab, and he gets kind of defensive. And that contrast was actually really kind of heartbreaking because, you know, you, the more you get to know Losman, the more you see him struggle with Tourette syndrome and his tics, and how beautiful it would be to have a life partner who just loves you. And even if she says, oh, you're my little weirdo and I love you, that was a term of affection contrasted to what he has lost there. I just thought that was really beautiful. And I wonder how important it is to you to have people in your life who you're not feeling like you got to suppress it. You don't have to come up with strategies to deal with it. You can be you and it's okay.
Well, I will say that when I published that HuffPost piece, I was amazed. And I said this last time I was on the program. I was amazed how many people reached out to me, including people I know from my life who, you know, who didn't know or didn't realize. And I realized after that piece was published, and it's even now, like, all the fear I had had over the years of being, you know, exposed again for those Tourette, for the tics, was probably unfounded. That most people actually are very forgiving and don't actually worry so much about those tics. And so, yeah, that's what I've discovered since the piece. And so I, you know,
I don't even like the word forgiving there. There's nothing for anybody to forgive. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Just understanding, like, they just roll with it. It's life.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I did think that you really wrote a lot of depth into those characters in a short amount of pages. And anybody who's been in a long relationship that has changed can feel the pain that he feels and some of the defensiveness he feels in that moment. Like, mm-hmm. he's got something to prove to her. And, you know, I just thought that was really, really well done. We're going to talk about memory in our second half hour. I want to talk about the nature of memory. And I've got questions about if Kyle would take a pill. If you were told as a patient that you can take a pill and when you go to sleep, it won't necessarily be dreams. It will be the reliving or the re-experiencing of actual childhood memories all the way back from literally breastfeeding to traumatic moments in your childhood that might be seminal moments in your life. You might have suppressed some. Would you go back and do that? Would you do that if you were promised that if you understood it better, it could take away your current trauma or anxiety or Tourette syndrome or something else? Would you want to go through that? Would you be willing to do it? And what is the nature of our relationship with our memory and trauma? So we're going to talk about that. It's part of this really fascinating, outstanding book. It's called The Book of Losman. It is available now where you find your books, Rochesterians, Finger Lakers, etc. And Kyle would love for you to find it at small booksellers, but you can find it wherever you want to find The Book of Losman. Let's come back with the author after this only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, Assemblymember Harry Bronson is running for re-election. He joins us in the first hour of the program. In the second hour, we talk to the team from the Rochester Education Foundation. They're working on college access, and that's been a challenge, especially post-pandemic, but they've got a lot they want to share with the community, and we'll do that on Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Kyle Semmel's pen name is K.E. Semmel. The book is The Book of Losman. Kyle is a pretty familiar figure for Connections listeners. He was the executive director of Writers and Books and has been on this program talking about books, culture, all kinds of things in literature and media. And this summer was on talking about Tourette syndrome, wrote a piece for Huffington Post that really blew up and was this really important explanation of not only his life, but what Tourette syndrome is and maybe isn't or gets misunderstood as. Well, the protagonist in his work of fiction called The Book of Losman, the character is Daniel Losman. He's an American living in Denmark. He's a 43-year-old literary translator, and he is separated from his longtime girlfriend partner. They have a 3-year-old son together. His son's name is Axel. And Losman notices that his 3-year-old son is starting to exhibit some of the tics that he has exhibited, and this causes him great anxiety, made worse by the fact that he finds out that his ex has already been contacted about these tics and didn't share that with Losman. And Losman was very upset by that. And that's another thing that people can relate to. If you have divorced, if you have separated, and you feel like someone's holding information from you, that does not go over well. Losman's not happy about that. And he wants to figure out what he can do to try to help Axel, maybe help himself. Do you have a son? Do you think about this with your own child?
Yeah, for sure. When he was little, my son, he also had some moments where he did tics. And I kind of worked that into the narrative because when he was little, I was concerned that he might have inherited my tics as well. He no longer has them. Whatever he was doing back then, he kind of outgrew. But it definitely was a concern.
And so Losman had noticed on his way to that cocktail party that we talked about that there was an advertisement for a study that seemed to maybe include some of his own experiences or that he might be eligible for. So he reaches out. He's going to go to the study. He goes to a meeting at a shawarma restaurant, and then he ends up in that position of, are you going to take this pill? Well, they tell him, take your clothes off, and they're going to hook him up with all of these electrodes. I think electrodes? I mean, sensors,
sure,
monitors?
Sure, yeah.
You know, those funky monitors and bad-smelling creams, and then they're going to give him a pill. And he's on the table kind of thinking, like, I think this might be too late. I don't think I can get out of this. Like, what am I doing here? And are these people here to kill me? Like, would this be what it looks like if I'm about to be like a test subject for like an evil maniac? But he's also very curious to know if this can work. Kyle talked earlier this hour about having this idea for years now about a pill that can restore memory. And I want to go in a couple different directions with this, but I want to start with this. Would you take such a pill?
Yes.
You would do this?
Absolutely.
And if the advertisement was, when you go to sleep tonight, we can't tell you exactly what you're going to see, but you're going to see a number of scenes from your early life, and they will be real, and they will be brought back to you vividly, and you will experience them as your baby self or a toddler self and your adult self.
Yeah.
You would do it.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I'm fascinated by memory. I think it's interesting. And I think it's also interesting that you mentioned earlier, I mean, we have things in our lives that we think of as important memories. But if we were to talk to a friend of ours from that same period,
yep,
and he or she would have a very different recollection of that memory.
Right.
I think it's amazing. And so, yeah, if something could be restored that gives you a kind of movie-like view of that memory, I absolutely would do it.
It brought back to mind for me one of my favorite podcast episodes I've listened to. I've been pretty clear over the years. I'm hot and cold on Malcolm Gladwell. There's a lot I don't like about Gladwell. I always tell people whenever I read Gladwell, I'm always like, God, oh, that's amazing. Yes. And then I think about it for 10 minutes and I'm like, no. But it's a good starting point to understand something. I feel like he oversimplifies, but he can be brilliant. And he did a several seasons of a podcast, and he did an episode on memory. Now, this particular episode was around the time that the NBC anchor, Brian Williams, is that the name? Yes, thank you. Boy, it's been so long. I didn't even remember. Brian Williams got in trouble for claiming that he had been really in the middle of like an Iraq firefight on an American service plane. And it turns out he was not. He was told about it when he was covering Iraq. And a lot of people piled on. His career was never the same after that. He was branded as a liar. And Gladwell basically said, he might have lied, but you would be surprised at what happens to our memories over time, even for the big things. And so he talked to researchers, and they talked to people about 9/11. 9/11 is a very well-remembered event, not just for the people, you know, who survived it or on Manhattan or responded to it, but for just about everybody. There's a few things that the Challenger, for me, Challenger explosion, 9/11, you probably remember where you were.
Mm-hmm.
And what Gladwell points out is you may get a few of those details right. You would be shocked at how many things you'd be wrong about. Mm-hmm. Even when you're like, oh, I know where I was. I know what I was doing. I know what was going on in my life that day. The research indicates you get some of the broad strokes right. People will be like, oh, that was the day before my wedding. And it turns out it was a month after your wedding. Or, you know, I was seeing this person and you were seeing a different person. It's amazing how we get some of the broad strokes correct, but we don't get a lot of the details right, even on the big things. So Losman remembers an event in his childhood with a teacher. But he even admits to a therapist, I'm not sure if she yelled at me in front of the class, if she pulled me aside. I can't even remember. And, you know, like therapist, like, well, this is a big thing in your life. And Losman is saying, I can't be certain of what I remember, which lines up exactly with what the research says, even the big things, which is why I think I would want to maybe take that pill just to see how much I remember about the big stuff.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you? In a way, I mean,
because it might be painful though too. It's kind of the opposite of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where it's like, are you going to scrub your memories of pain, thinking that it's going to make your life better now? And it turns out that would not be very good for you, because the human experience is what is required to make you who you are today, and scrubbing your life of pain seems convenient, but is probably a bad choice. Well, this is the opposite. This is like reintroducing everything in vivid detail and making sure that you understand it in depth. Yeah. So that's why you'd want to do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, with life comes pain, it comes love, comes all sorts of different things that sometimes are not pleasant. And I don't know, just thinking of life as a kind of jigsaw puzzle that we put together. And it has all these different parts. So I guess that's why I would do it, because it's part of this larger puzzle that we're working towards in some way. And one of the things that, you know, I think about a lot is the idea that when we die, we are, you know, we've been told that your life flashes before you. And so the question I have is, where do these memories go? If you will see these memories flash before you at the end of your life, where are they now in your brain? And I'm not a neuroscientist, of course. So, like, if you're a neuroscience listening to this, and, you know, I am not pretending to be a neuroscientist while writing this book or even talking about it now. But I do find so much about the brain absolutely enthralling because of what we don't know.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about the Tourette part of this, because part of what Losman is trying to do is understand his own traumas in the hopes that if you do that, maybe you unlock what quote unquote caused or triggered Tourette syndrome. And is that part of the real life literature on Tourette?
No,
I didn't think so.
No. And you know, this is a novel, so yeah, I can do whatever I want.
Absolutely.
With it.
Absolutely. I'm just curious to know how much it tracks to real life. There.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, I don't know if there's any research being done specifically on trauma and Tourette. And I certainly don't make a claim that Tourette is caused by trauma. And, you know, part of the reason I've always considered this a kind of dubious drug trial is because even the researchers don't entirely know.
Yeah.
And so it is a bit like just throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what happens when you do this. So I guess that's an important thing to mention. And I don't want to make a claim that, you know, trauma induces Tourette or whatever. We don't know.
No, I very much understand that. But what's curious about Losman is he goes from, in the moment before he takes that pill, wondering if it's too late to get out of it, thinking this is a big mistake, to he needs it. Like, he finds himself needing more of it. Without giving away too much, can you describe maybe the evolution of what Losman is starting to see and why he maybe feels like he needs the pill more often? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, one of the things, once he takes it that first time especially, and he sees these things and realizes that this pill actually works, it suddenly opens up this raging desire to see more of it. And then there's the question that the researchers kind of promise him, that maybe you can get to the bottom of your tics, that maybe your Tourette was manifested because of some childhood trauma. And he thinks in his mind that the more he sees these memories, the more likely he is to find the source of his Tourette. And therefore, maybe it could also help his son. But, you know, I'm trying not to give too much away here, but there are no easy answers in this book. And that's, of course, purposeful that the results of the study are highly inconclusive, to say the least. And there's no resolution on the question of his Tourette found in memories.
Parallel to his quest to bring back his memories through this study with this pill, his father is losing his memories. His father is declining with dementia. And, you know, he is Losman, the character in this book, is not someone who has, you know, said, "I love you" to his dad. But they've had experiences together. They haven't been as tight like that. But now he's kind of regretting that. He's seeing his father barely able to recognize many things in life, although they can sit and watch a baseball game. And he can kind of touch his dad's forehead and kiss his dad on the forehead and think, you know, can we still communicate? That is very relatable. I mean, like, the pill is this really interesting literary device, which I am totally fascinated by. But boy, we can all relate to having family members who are losing memory. And I just wanted to share how beautifully I thought you wrote those scenes, because they are such common experience. And it is an interesting dovetail with the loss of memory with the quest to get your memory back here. Is that something that you've experienced yourself with family?
My grandmother had dementia.
Yeah.
And I watched her kind of slide into that over the years. And I always did feel regret. So, you know, that I wasn't around as much for her. And so I think that feeling at least pervades Losman in that scene.
Yeah. The book's great. It's The Book of Losman. It's out now. You can find it at Book Eater. There's an event on Friday at Book Eater. What time?
The event starts at 7.
7 o'clock at Book Eater, which is a really cool place, by the way.
It is, yeah.
So you can find the book around Rochester in independent bookshops, and, of course, where the online factories are as well. Book of Losman is what it's called. Let me grab a phone call from Randy in Fairport. Hey, Randy, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
And hello to a fellow author. I'm an author myself. Book just came out recently. But when he was talking about memory, this was critical when I was writing, in that I would have literally vivid memories. Like, I was talking with the person about some passages in the book that needed to be added. And I woke up and I knew the DM typing so I wouldn't forget it. So, you know, I can understand where he's talking about trying to recapture memories in that respect. From childhood, this wasn't that young, but it was more recent, but it was vivid. Like, you could literally see yourself in the conversation in your mind.
Yeah. Anything you want to add there, Kyle? I mean, like, this idea of seeing yourself in a cinematic way is fascinating.
Well, it's how I write is over weeks before I actually sit down to write anything, I will play the scenes in my head continually over and over, and I will revise them in my head until I'm ready to actually put them down on paper. So in a sense, that I get that. I get what the caller is talking about.
I think I would have been surprised if there was a moment late in this book where he takes a pill and he sees a scene from his childhood, and he goes, "Oh, that's it. This is Tourette Day. This is where I got Tourette's, and this is where the tics come from." It's more complex than that, but it really lends itself to a movie. I just have to tell you this. I mean, I know that's a dumb cliche direction to take with an author. I get it. Authors aren't writing so they can turn this book into a movie. But the more this book goes on, the more it's like, yes, like, it could definitely. No? Yes?
No, I mean,
is that all right with you?
I'm with you on that. I'm going to quote you on that. And One of the nice things about SFWP specifically, as we've talked about at the beginning of the show, when I was with those other publishers in the 46 rejections, I had an agent at the time. And in this particular case, I do not have an agent anymore for the Book of Lozman. But I had published Simon Frewlin's stories, a book called Milk, about 10 years ago with SFWP. So I was familiar with SFWP. And this book, The Book of Lozman, very deliberately plays with Simon's work. So there's a meta-text part to it that readers may or may not know, and they don't even need to know. So like the opening scene, you mentioned the dead guy. That is, I translated a story called Kramer for this book, Milk. And that scene, that story was so vivid that when I sat down to start, writing this book, I wanted Kramer in the book. And I wanted to explore the idea of him being a fictional character in another fictional, in another novel.
We're getting very meta now.
Yeah, it was. I know. But again, I was trying to have fun with this. Like, I've as a translator, you're so embedded in these worlds that it's really hard to explain, I suppose, unless you're a writer who's so embedded in their work that you know what I'm talking about. It's very hard to explain, but it is. You just want to continue being in that world a little bit longer. And so for me, Kramer and even some of the other kind of characters, Caroline Jensen, for example, there's some elements that, she's kind of borrowed a little bit partly from Simon. Simon gave me permission to do it. Simon read it. So yeah.
Well, I understand that the route from a group of pages in Western New York to a big screen is unlikely, but I just want people to experience the book. And if that's what it takes, Kyle, we're going to have to do that.
Actually, I realized what I was aiming at in the last part I was saying is that SFWP works with a sub-rights agent. And so that sub-rights agent basically sells, unlike many small presses, they work with a sub-rights agent to work with translation rights, film rights, audio rights, etc. The book already has sold audio rights, so you can get it on Audible as well if you like listening to audiobooks. And I think it's well translated by Tristan Wright. But along with those rights, like I said, film, so the agent really likes the book as well. And so it's not completely far-fetched that film rights might come as well with it.
Come on. I mean, you have this great device, the pill. I mean, it's been gestating in your mind for 20 years, and now it's out. Before I let you go, Joel says, this sounds like as if it's a great book to read alongside Richard Powers' Bewilderment.
Is that the one where the happiness gene?
I have no idea. I don't know the book. You have to ask Joel. But you know what Joel, Joel says, the pill sounds as if similar to some of the benefits of ayahuasca. Isn't that funny? There you go. Yeah. So that comes up as well. Mm-hmm. In fact, a fear. Oh, well, do you want to just describe a little bit?
I don't know. Do I? No, I mean, the fear that he's going to lose his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Joel, you're on the money here. So whatever Richard Powers' Bewilderment is, I'm sure this is a great book to go alongside it. Yeah. And this is not a great reason to advertise a book, but it's pretty slim. I mean, it's a pretty fast read. It's very fast. How many pages is this book?
216, I think.
I mean, how many words? I'm going to guess.
No, 206.
72,000 words.
No, about 60.
Oh.
I mean, it was originally more than 80, and then I trimmed it down considerably.
Wow, that is a lot of editing.
That's like, well, I mean, it's pretty normal, though.
I know, but that's painful, isn't it? You've got this great story. 20,000 words taken out.
Well, I'd like to think, though, that your reaction has been super positive, and it may not have been as positive with those extra 20,000 words.
No, it is a well-tuned machine, man. And I'm just so glad to like it so much.
Me too.
Because I would have had to do the interview anyway. We booked it. And then it would have been awkward. I've been like, well, you know. And I've had those moments, by the way. You do 500 hours a year. We do lots of books, Rob Braden, Megan Mack. It happens. We got big smiles on our faces. Most of the time, we're pretty good at choosing books. Writers and Books always has Rochester Reads. That's always a fascinating read. But where do you want this to go next, last minute or so here? Like, what's your plan here?
Well, you can learn more about me and my work at kesemmel.com. Again, the book is available wherever books are sold. It's called The Book of Losman. No relation to J.P. Losman, the former Bills quarterback. But yeah, the book launch will be Friday at Book Eater on Clinton Avenue. I'm very excited. There's going to be a lot of publications that will be coming out in the next few weeks about the book. So you may hear a little bit of it. So follow me.
I was going to ask you, I mean, Losman even gets bored living in Copenhagen. Come on, man. Come on.
You know, anytime you live in a place long enough, you stop seeing it.
And you start taking it for granted.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we live close to Niagara Falls.
Or the Finger Lakes.
When was the last time you went to either of those places?
That's right. I mean, so that's a lot of Rochesterians. But that's right. People are very defensive of where they live if outsiders criticize it. But to insiders, it's kind of like, well, it's boring. There's nothing to do. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, let me do say, though, Copenhagen is a wonderful city, and I would totally live there, for sure.
You don't think you'd get bored?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's a wonderful city.
Congratulations on this book.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Just beautiful stuff. That's Kyle Semmel, K.E. Semmel, the pen name. The book is The Book of Losman, L-O-S-M-A-N. It's fantastic. From all of us at Connections, thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.